Blog Talk Radio.
Children of all ages, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Weekly. Clearly my head is completely in this. Too much caffeine messes with my brain. This is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and I want to thank everyone for being here, for listening in live or after the fact, for sharing us with your friends. It's all appreciated. It's all much appreciated. You guys are awesome. I'm well aware of just how much MMA-related content there is out there, especially in the podcast format, and I appreciate you choosing us. Although, you could do a lot worse. You know, I used to say that there were several out there that are better than this one, and that's still true to a degree. But I've recently been made aware of just how much I don't want to say anything too derogatory, but the people at Fox Sports 1 have had their little talk show segments bring up MMA. And Colin Cowherd knows very little about the sport. He knows enough to lob softball questions at Dana White when Dana White's on his show. His show with Whitlock, where they have guests on, there's very frequently people who don't have the soundest grasp of the sport. You have the collective jackwagon of Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp talking about something that they know nothing about. And I just realized that you have these high-profile outlets that are putting out MMA-related content, and I listen to them, and I think, you guys are morons. So I hope you all have arrived at that conclusion, and that's part of the reason you listen to this show, because I may not have the biggest platform. I mean, I have, you know, a television studio or a budget, but I try to know what I'm talking about, and I try to produce the best quality possible. So hopefully that carries over. And again, thank you all for listening and for continuing to grow the brand. It is, again, it's much appreciated. If you are listening live, we go live every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, barring a few exceptions, and we'll get into one of those later in the show. I'm happy to take live callers. If you have a question or a comment you want to get on the air, the number to do so is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. And I'm more than happy to, again, basically anything other than a long string of profanity, and you are good to go. All right, on the show tonight, first up, we will be previewing UFC Fight Night 103, which takes place next Sunday, the 15th of January. This is a rather inauspicious card to kick off 2017 with for the UFC. It lost what I felt was the most interesting fight last week, and we'll touch on that in more specifics in a bit. And we'll also probably talk a little bit about Todd Grisham joining the UFC commentary team, and I'm going to express my shock at how quickly the rose-colored glasses came on about Mike Goldberg. Because, really, guys, he's been gone for, what, 2 weeks? And all of a sudden, he's morphed in your heads into this all-time great broadcaster? He was important, but come on, let's not ignore all the rightful criticisms we had of him over the years just because he's gone now. It's stupid. All right, anyway, here with me, as always, is 411 Mania's jack-of-all-trades, The Wildcat himself, Jeff Harris, is back with us. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm ready for the glorious return of the greatest UFC fighter of all time, the double champion, the Hall of Famer, sweet baby J, BJ Penn. It's happening, folks, and it's real. And you know what, Jason Whitlock, I'm just glad I wasn't sitting next to you when you were going on about Ronda Rousey, because you would see me, smoke would have been coming out of my ears, and it would not have been fun.
Yeah, look, Whitlock and the other one that caught a lot of attention, Shannon Sharp, who is one half of, does a debate show style show with Skip Bayless, talked a lot about her on Twitter, and just the most uninformed, just asshattery I've ever been exposed to from an outsider's perspective looking in on this sport. It was ridiculous. So thanks to all those Fox Sports 1 debate style show and their inability to have people on who actually understand the product. So good for you guys.
I mean, I just don't, like, I don't know how Kenny Florian and Karen Bryant could sit there and, I mean, you know, having the knowledge and experience they do with the sport and just sit there while Whitlock was saying that stuff and not just keep their composure, but just not, I don't know. I feel like their responses could have been stronger, honestly.
Well, Whitlock's a bit of a name and is part of a drawing show for them. And Kenny Florian and Karen Bryant are both eminently replaceable, all things considered. So you got to play nice. All right, let's jump into Fight Night 103, because I spent too much more time thinking about, again, mainstream sports coverage of MMA. I'm going to start throwing things.
Can you feel it, Robert Winfrey? Sweet baby Jay is coming back.
I can feel the impending injury that is going to derail the main event over the next week.
Warren Ivy.
Yeah, that would be just hilarious. Yeah, something like that. All right. In UFC Fight Night 103 from Phoenix, Arizona, next Sunday, the 15th. I don't know why they're going with Sunday, but they are. So, by the way, there will be no show next week. I will be covering this event, and I can't cover an event and do the show at the same time. There are severe limitations. We lost, before we get into the main event proper, scheduled for this event was a fight between Jimmy Rivera and Brian Caraway. I was actually looking forward to that fight. Well, I've become a believer in Jimmy Rivera's abilities. It was, which fight of his that sold me on him? It wasn't the Faber fight. Might have been the Munoz one. It was Munoz or Alcantara where I kind of turned the corner on him and went, yeah, no, you're very good. And then he's, of course, coming off of that big win over Uriah Faber. He was supposed to fight Brian Caraway. I was looking forward to that fight. In no small part because I imagine Rivera would have cleaned Caraway's clock. But then Brian Caraway got injured, which happens, but still sucks. And the only replacement that the UFC could actually find was Marlon Vera, who is an unranked bantamweight whose UFC record is, I want to say, like 2-2.
It is 2-2.
Okay. And
8-3.
Yeah. And Rivera's response to this was, I'm not going to go from training for a top five guy and fighting a top five guy to fighting someone who's unranked. There is no upside to him for that. And if he loses, and look, again, I would favor him quite heavily, but this is a crazy sport. Anything can happen. Then he has lost all of the momentum he's accrued. I don't blame the guy for deciding not to take a short notice fight. That's absolutely his prerogative. And I'm not going to beat him over the head about it. Again, it's his choice. The only thing he's losing out on is money. I mean, that's literally it. It's a professional choice he made, and I have no cause to yell about it. It just sucks that the fight got canceled because I was looking forward to it. The rest of that card, I'm hoping this card delivers in terms of action, because on paper, it's, it's not great. The main event is the hypothetical, and I say hypothetical because he's tried this before and it fell through, return at featherweight of BJ Penn.
Sweet Benny, BJ Penn.
One of the most gifted fighters the sport's ever seen. One of only three men to hold UFC titles in two different weight classes. Unarguably one of the most prodigious talents. And he's been trying to make this comeback for a while. And it's been derailed, mostly because of him. Injuries, or he had a minor issue with USADA where he was taking IVs. He wasn't supposed to. This has been derailed, and for some reason he wants to come back at featherweight. And he's fighting Yair Rodriguez. Now, if this were BJ Penn in anything approaching his prime, I honestly feel he would just crush Rodriguez. He has the right style. He doesn't care about the spinning crap and the flashy kicks. He's going to settle down. He's going to block. He's going to counter. He's going to take you down. He's going to beat you up. He's going to do what a veteran does. But BJ Penn is so far removed from his prime, and this is so... Look, I don't know about you, all of you out there, but I remember his last fight, his featherweight fight with Frankie Edgar. I think I covered that event. And he looked like a corpse. All right? He looked so...
It was Mike Dolce's fault. Mike Dolce was to blame.
Fair enough. Sure, if you say so. Look, I've seen... BJ Penn has lost worse than he lost to Frankie Edgar. Okay, he took much more damage in the Roy McDonald fight. His second fight with Frankie Edgar actually was... very one-sided in terms of in favor of Edgar. The second GSP fight. I mean, the guy's lost. And he's lost.
Fight with Nick Diaz.
Yeah. He's lost before, and he's lost badly at times. But he has never looked as bad as he did in that third fight with Frankie Edgar. He's been outclassed before, and he's taken more damage in other fights. But I have never seen... But that was the worst he ever looked, physically and in terms of performance. It was... I mean, for those of you who haven't seen it, by all means, look it up. He stands upright, which... And look, there are arguments about what stance you want to use, and reasonable people can disagree.
I recall his, heels were off the ground, or am I misremembering that?
You might be right.
He had the weirdest stand. I had no idea why he was standing like that. It just looked...
It was completely, completely vertical. And... Which, again, you're just not supposed to do. You're not supposed to stand that vertical. It makes you very easy to hit. There was no head movement. There was no footwork. And, I mean, again, when I say he looked like a corpse, there are zombies on The Walking Dead that are more lively than he was in that fight.
It looked like the Octagon should have been the last place he was in it on that night.
Yeah, it was awful. It was just awful. And now he's coming back at featherweight. So
again. This is what is so mind-boggling about this situation to me. After all of this, after everything, he's coming back again at featherweight. And if I'm wrong, so be it, but I don't see how training at Greg Jackson is going to make him look better when I truly believe his sweet spot was always at lightweight. And I feel it was a massive waste of time for him to keep, after the Matt Hughes fight, to continue fighting his welterweight as much as he did. Okay, a fight. Okay, like a legacy fight with Matt Hughes, a rubber match with Matt Hughes at welterweight, basically not cut any weight at all. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But what, lightweight was his best division. That was his division. I don't know why, when he looks so horrible, like, why put that extra pressure on yourself? Why try to take off that extra weight you don't really need when – when BJ Penn was at his best and when he looked in the very best shape, it was always at lightweight, was it not?
I generally feel that way. I mean, he was never around at welterweight long enough. I mean, he won the title there, but he was kind of hot-shotted into that position after the lightweight division was aborted. And then, I mean, he came back.
He also came back at welterweight, lost
to GSP. Got the title shot because GSP got injured.
He fought Leonardo Machida at 190 pounds, basically.
Yeah, and look, the less said about his time in K1, the better, just as a general rule. Now, lightweight has always kind of been where he performed the best.
Yeah.
Look, as far as analyzing this fight, again, BJ Penn theoretically has the tools to beat Yair Rodriguez. He's a veteran. He's well-rounded. He hits hard. He's seen a lot of stuff, including all of the, you know, random crap that Rodriguez throws in there. He's theoretically quite capable of taking him down, and Rodriguez on his back is not something we've been terribly exposed to. And Penn on top is world class, and I don't say that lightly. His top game is, and has always been, of that caliber. But I don't see him recapturing that. Not at his age, not at this weight, not after all this time. And Rodriguez is getting better. I mean, look, his fight against Alex Caceres was very bizarre in a lot of ways. But he's an improving fighter. I don't like BJ Penn's chances here. It's been too long. He's too old. It's the wrong weight class. Now, could he win? Yeah, he's theoretically still got power, although
Here's where I am right now with this fight, Robert. If BJ Penn wins this fight next weekend, I will consider it a modern miracle, just of everything. I'm going all in on Rodriguez, and I see no way BJ Penn wins this fight. He shouldn't win this fight, especially at featherweight. Even at lightweight, I feel it'd be highly unlikely. He spent too much time getting beat up above his weight class and then below his weight class, and he's far past his prime. He wasn't training seriously enough when he should have been, and, I mean, that's it, really. And if he somehow walks away from this fight with a win, it will be a modern miracle, and I don't see anything else, honestly.
If this were a 3-round fight, I could see an argument for him taking 2 rounds. But over 5, I don't give him a chance.
No, not even. Even if this was a 2-round exhibition, I'd still go with Rodriguez. Rodriguez can be a little reckless, I think. But for one thing, he's young, and he's not only young, but his speed is on his side right now. It's not on BJ Penn's side right now.
I could see BJ Penn winning this fight if Rodriguez – hang on, if they both came out, shook hands, and agreed to a pure jiu-jitsu match. If all they do is jiu-jitsu – BJ Penn wins.
Well,
anything else, and he's going to lose badly.
Penn's jiu-jitsu, as far as MMA goes, he's never been good off of his back, Robert. And it's only good if he gets you to the mat and he's on top of you. He's good working from the top, but he's always been bad off of his back. And I feel history has proven that. He's never worked well put on his back. Not that Rodriguez is going to take him down, but
It's also a little bit skewed because the only guys who have been able to take him down are the highest quality fighters.
I really have nothing else to add here other than that I love DJ Penn and what he's done for this sport, but he's going to get destroyed. Sorry, DJ Penn.
Yeah, I can't. Again, if they both agree to do nothing but jiu-jitsu, I can see BJ Penn winning. Other than that, I don't give him a lot. And his takedowns have always been acceptable, but usually from the clinch, his movement's been iffy, especially, again, I only have the one featherweight fight to go on. But this, I imagine this ends badly for BJ. And Rodriguez gets a legend on his resume and moves up to fight a very legitimate top 10 featherweight, which is a fight I'll be much more interested in when it comes around, because I want to see Rodriguez tested against someone who knows
I don't think you want to test Rodriguez just yet against major names.
Well, if I'm the UFC, of course not. He's a pretty big star. He's flashy. He's got a good following in the Latin American audience. I mean, for me personally, I want to see him fight somebody who's not going to just fall into, you know, the flashy stuff, who's going to hit him in the face a few times.
My thing is that he came into the UFC fairly inexperienced. He came in with only 4 pro fights. He's fought most of his fights in the UFC. I think he just still needs more experience, and he still needs a couple. I don't want to say soft touches, but I think he still needs, you know, sub 15 competition before you start putting him in there with top 10 contenders.
I would like to see him fight Mursad Beck or Darren Elkins next, just personally, one of those two.
That could be a bad matchup for him. You could do worse than Darren Elkins, honestly.
It could, but I want to see if he can win in the bad matchups. It's an important component.
Yeah, it's a good point. After this fight, a Darren Elkins type, I think, would be fun.
Heck, you could he and Duho Choi could go in there and try to kill each other because they probably would.
That fight, I don't really like either right now.
Now, yeah, you don't want to kill off 2 rising contenders in the division, but yeah, I got Rodriguez, and man, I don't know what to think about this one. But BJ Penn's a bit of a draw, so it ought to do at least decent numbers. All right, the co-main event at lightweight, we have Joe Lauzon fighting Marcin Held. You know, there was a time when I would have taken Marcin Held here, but then he had the most boneheaded fight ever against Diego Sanchez. I mean, here's the minor thing about this. Sanchez's top control is better than Lauzon's. Lauzon's more likely to get into wild grappling exchanges, and Held can hold his own under those conditions. But I don't know. And this is the weird thing about Held. He tends to win when he's not supposed to. Again, he was supposed to beat Diego Sanchez. That was kind of that was a softball in a lot of respects. And then he goes out there and somehow misses it. I'm going with Lauzon here. Held just looks... His in-fight, in-cage decision-making against Diego Sanchez was so bad. And look, Joe Lauzon is demonstrably better than Diego Sanchez. I'm going with Lauzon here. And Held could wind up making a quick exit from the UFC.
Held was a very impressive standout performer in Bellator. I mean, I know it's Bellator, but he was he was a submission specialist. He was always getting guys with some type of submission. You know, he liked that heel hook or toe hold variation. I mean, he even beat Patrycki Freire, Patrycki Pitbull at lightweight, and he won. I mean, he was a lightweight tournament finalist, and then he won another lightweight tournament. He was just never able to win the title. He lost to Will Brooks. And even Dave Jansen, who beat him earlier, he beat him in his very last fight in Bellator before he entered the UFC. And it's not just the level of competition that changes in the UFC. It's just, you know, it's the scale and the scope. And some guys are it's tough for them when they're fighting on a much bigger stage. I don't know if that's been part of Held's problem. That being said, I think this could be a very interesting grappling technical battle in terms of MMA. I'm leaning toward Lozon, but I can see ways Held can win.
Yeah, if we get into some grappling exchanges, it could be very fun. These guys are very good on the mat. I would still give Lozon the edge under those circumstances, but where the most fun could be had from the viewer's perspective.
Lozon gave a very tough performance in his last fight against Miller. He arguably could have won that fight. It was much closer than his first fight with Miller. Lozon's been a little hit and miss in this half of his career, but he's still fairly competitive against these type of opponents, and that's why I'm leaning toward him winning the fight. But if Held were to walk away with the win, it just shows, you know, MMA math does not work ever. Yet again.
Very rarely does it work. All right. At welterweight, this is actually the fight I am now looking forward to the most on this card, all things considered. And it's purely personal. Court McGee is fighting Ben Saunders.
Killer B.
Ben Saunders coming off of that win over Jacob Volkman. No, that was outside the UFC.
Yeah, he had some personal stuff. He needed some time away from the sport, and now he's back.
Yeah, his last UFC fight, he was defeated by Patrick Cote via TKO.
And Cote was on a very good run at that point. So, I mean, it is Patrick Cote, but it's not like that wasn't the worst win in the world at that point for Saunders to lose to Cote.
Yeah. On the other hand, we have Court McGee, who was very inactive for periods of time due to injury. In 16, he lost to Santiago Ponzinibbio and defeated Dominique Steele. There's some potential for fun here. These are two guys who don't have a whole lot of thought for defense, kind of like hitting each other in the face. Wrestling edge goes a little bit to McGee, but Saunders has a very good guard. His rubber guard especially is quite good. He works a lot off of his back. I don't know. This is a coin flip in a lot of ways. And because of that, and I'll freely admit, this is a sentimental pick, but I'm going with Court. Logically, I might lean a little bit Saunders, but there's enough points where they match up that I think might favor McGee a little bit that I'm gonna lean towards him. And again, this is a very sentimental pick. I've got a soft spot for Court McGee, so I'm gonna pick him. I might regret that, but either way, I'd be rooting for him. So that's where I'm leaning. This has a lot of fun potential in it as far as this fight goes. So
I think we're going to get a lot of violence, a lot of back and forth action here. I think both these fighters, they're very tough, gritty opponents. Court McGee, you know, he's never really been an elite competitor, but he's been a strong mid-level fighter for the welterweight division. I think he's been on the wrong end of a couple bad decisions at some points in his career, especially the fight with Nick Ring. I really felt he won that fight. Ben Saunders, I'm picking him to win just because I feel he's a little more versatile. I think he's a little more technical, and I think he has more ways he can win, and that's why I'm picking Saunders.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong there. There's, again, logically, if I was just pure logic, I'd go with Saunders, but I'm okay making an emotional pick in
it's
this
interesting
instance.
Because I see them as very similar fighters in some ways.
Yeah, there are some very certainly there's a lot of trajectory similarities as far as their ceilings. All right, and kicking off the main card. Again, this was supposed to be Rivera and Caraway. I already talked a little bit about that. Frankie Saenz will fight Augusto Mendez. Is this the guy who also... Trying to remember if this is the guy who goes by Lileko. Not sure. No, I think that guy's last name is Gumarice. Anyway, Augusto Mendez, who has fought in the UFC. He was on one of the seasons of Tough Brazil, I want to say. Saenz, unfortunately, on a 2-fight losing streak. Had a 3-fight winning streak in the UFC at one point. Including big wins over Yuri Alcantara and Sirwan Kakai, and fought very well against Uriah Faber. He was very close to winning that fight. Then he got TKO'd by Eddie Wineland because, well, Eddie Wineland hits really hard. And if you're not ready for that, it's going to go bad for you.
Mendez is, let's see, he's 0-1 in the UFC. Lost his Octagon debut to Cody Garbrandt February of last year, first round knockout. So I would say both guys are in a pretty much a must win situation for this fight, and I'm leaning towards Saenz. I think the key for him is not to get too wild in this fight, not get into a brawl, use his tools, and get the win. It's more important that he get the win here than get a flashy win.
Yeah, he really needs to break that losing streak because, again, Faber, one of the best ever. Wineland in the midst of a bit of a resurgence. But, yeah, he's got to win this one. And I'm leaning towards Saenz as well.
Robert, the point is, no matter what, you don't want to go 0-3 in the UFC. No matter who you fight, you just don't. Some guys can survive, you know, not getting caught from 0-3, but it's still bad for your career in general, you know. Just for the overall health.
It's a rough thing to come back from. I got signs. I think he's just a little bit better everywhere than Mendez. So we'll see how that one plays out. But this seems like not a full-blown gimme for signs, but a fight he should win.
I agree.
All right. On the prelims, what do we have here? At flyweight, John Moraga is fighting Sergio Pettis. Pettis was supposed to fight...
Your favorite fighter, Robert.
Yeah.
Sergio Pettis, your favorite sibling fighter.
I'm not entirely sure even with that qualification that's an accurate statement. Well, that's probably still, if we're going just by personal favorites, it's probably Shogun still. Yeah, both. You got the Nogueras, though. That's a tough one. You got the Hua brothers and the Noguera brothers really muddying that debate.
I kid because I feel like Sergio has made you quite angry in the past with his performances.
Once or twice. Pettis actually got lucky here. He was supposed to fight Juicy A Formiga. And I think Formiga would have wrecked him.
I think Moraga's going to wreck him, to be honest with you.
I don't disagree. I mean, Moraga, you know, he got run over a little bit by Demetrius Johnson. He's on a 2-fight losing streak. I mean, one of those is to Benavidez. The other was to Mateus Nicolau. But he's still a solid fighter. Yeah, I'm going with Moraga. I'm not sold on Pettis as being consistent against high level competition. His two wins at flyweight are over Chris Carriasso, who bottomed out pretty hard, and Chris Kalaitis, who, well, is kind of a ham and egger. And Moraga
Didn't Carriasso give Pettis a ton of trouble in the final round? Pettis, he almost finished him early, and then didn't Carriasso, come back and almost win the fight?
Yeah, I seem to. There was. It was a lot closer than you might have expected, seeing just that Pettis won via unanimous decision.
Right.
Good.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to move on to the next fight, so anything you've got left else on that one?
Yeah.
Okay, at heavyweight, this was actually supposed to be Victor Pesta fighting Damian Grabowski. Grabowski wound up pulling out and was replaced by Alexei Oleinik. Oleinik just had a substantial winning streak broken by Daniel Omielanchuk. Fortunately, he still is dealing with activity issues, which is sad because Oleinik is a very good grappler. I've looked up several of his fights outside of the UFC, and I'm kind of a fan. Against Pesta, Victor Pesta has a grand total of one win in the UFC. That was against Konstantin Orokin. He was defeated by Ruslan Magomedov. He was TKO'd by Derek Lewis, then knocked out by Marcin Tybura. I don't like Pesta's chances here. I think Oleinik gets back on the horse. At lightweight, Alex White will fight Tony Martin. White was supposed to fight Eric Koch. No, Tony Martin was supposed to fight Eric Koch. Pulled out. Now we have Martin and White. Martin really kind of needs a win. He's coming off of a win, but his UFC record is less than stellar. And White beat Artem Lobov, which means very little, because Artem Lobov sucks. Knocked out Esteban Payon. His only losses are to Lucas Martins and Clay Collard, and those guys are both pretty good. I'll go with White there. At heavyweight, oh, jeez. There are three heavyweight fights on this card. What did I do to deserve this? On the plus side, this fight might be a boom heavyweights fight. You have Walt Harris, who's coming off of a loss to Shamil Abdurakhimov. He's kind of been trading wins and losses in the UFC. But he's at least either going to go down on his shield and knock somebody out more often than not. He's fighting Chase Sherman. This seems like not a gimme, but a designated win for Harris. I'll go with Harris. At women's strawweight, on Fight Pass, we have Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger taking on Nina Ansaroff. Jones-Liebarger has yet to win in the UFC. She's 0-2. And she lost to Tisha Torres and Randa Marcos. Marcos must wait for that fight. And then you've got Ansaroff, who also has not won in the UFC, though I thought she won the Juliana Lima fight. Though she did get comprehensively beaten by Justine Kish. I'm actually going to flip a coin here. Hang on. All right, tails. So that's Nina Ansaroff. She's on that half of the graph I'm looking at. Hope that one doesn't suck, mostly. Lightweight. Two guys who I do not know will be fighting. We have Devin Powell taking on Drakkar Close. I feel like one of these guys was a late notice replacement.
Drakkar Close, who sounds like a Game of Thrones villain name.
Powell was supposed to fight Jordan Rinaldi, and then Rinaldi pulled out. Again, two guys I know nothing about. I'm going with Close because he has a cooler name. That is the sum total of my analysis there.
Yeah, it
light
like
heavyweight.
The name, first from George R. R. Martin.
Yes, all hail Call Drakkar. Light heavyweight, Joachim Christensen will be fighting Bojan Mihailovic. I know Mihailovic has fought for the UFC before. I want to say Christensen has as well. I hate picking low-level light heavyweight fights because there's just so much that can go either way. I'll go with Mihailovic. I seem to recall him having a decent performance. And then kicking everything off, we have more heavyweights. This fight, I have no hope for being boom. We have Dmitry Smoylikov, who lost his UFC debut. He didn't look especially good either in that fight. Taking on Cyril Asker. That's a tough one. And Smoylikov just looked so bleh. Yeah, I'll go with Asker. His name's easier to spell. I need to study a little bit of tape on a few of these guys, but I'll go with Asker there. I'm not confident on that one. All right, that is your set of prelims. It's, well, it's certainly a collection of fights that has the potential to deliver. And I sincerely hope it does. I don't have a lot of hope. I don't have a lot of hope, but I do hope that it does. All right, Jeff, anything on that group of fights you want to talk about? Anything that stands out to you?
Moraga versus Pettis. I like the fight, and I'm picking Moraga to crush Pettis. And that's about it.
All right. Yeah, it's, well, it's a night of fights, so we're all going to hope that the action exceeds the name value on this particular card because, again, a little bit bleh.
It's we lost Rivera versus Caraway just because that, I mean, that's a fight between two top contenders, and the winner easily could have been one of the next people to fight for the title at Bantamweight. And Bantamweight, you know, it's a surging division right now. We can't deny that anymore. It's talent infused. It's got a lot of interesting surging prospects. It's a very interesting scene right now at Bantamweight. So it's just too bad because that was a more than relevant fight that could have really at least made this a more impressive, memorable card.
Well, it was certainly the most relevant fight. At least that's kind of what I
was
looking for.
It was a relevant fight.
Now, Bantamweight's in a pretty good spot right now. I mean, again, a year and a half ago, it was, well, not. And now it is. So good for them kind of getting, you know, getting the right people in the right places and letting things, you know, come along naturally. So I'm looking forward to that. And I hope Caraway's injury wasn't serious. Unless it's, I'm not even going to say that. I can't make the joke appropriately. So I hope it's not serious. I hope it's not serious unless it just ends his career and he goes away. In which case, please. But I hope it's not terribly serious and they just reschedule him and Rivera because there could be some, again, that's a relevant fight and it's a fight I'm interested in. I'm curious to see Rivera fight someone with kind of Caraway's grappling, smothering style. And I'm never opposed to watching Brian Caraway get punched in the face repeatedly, and Jimmy Rivera would do just that because Jimmy Rivera is very good. All right. Oh, just got this message. Okay, calling in here, we have longtime contributor Pat Mullen wanted to call in and say a few things.
Hooray.
Here. So, hey, Pat, how you doing?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm sorry I'm calling in a bit tardy. I didn't have a whole lot to contribute about our upcoming fight night card. I think generally everybody would agree on paper it's not really a strong card, but when you're running events like the amount the UFC has chosen to run, and even when scaling back, injuries will derail things. And as it happens when you open a Halloween candy bag and you get a piece of candy corn out, the lesson learned is they can't all be winners. That being said, I've been reading a lot this week. The big news, and I'm sorry if I'm jumping the gun on this, but one of the bigger news stories to come out is with the departure of Mike Goldberg from his lead commentary position as play-by-play man for the UFC A commentary team, he's going to be replaced by Todd Grisham.
Right.
Most people are familiar with Todd Grisham from his 7-year stint with World Wrestling Entertainment. After leaving them in 2011, he's worked with ESPN. He has done SportsCenter as an anchor. He's worked another host of programs. And he's getting a lot of what I feel is undue flack from the majority of the MMA populace. He's getting slammed left and right as someone who's terrible, when at the same time, the majority of the people doing the complaining about Grisham are the people who mock Goldberg's commentary style for years on end. And now that he's leaving and is being, including me, but, and I'll get to my point with that, Jeff, because Goldberg is terrible. And this is where I'm going with this, because I'm going to have precise precision when I talk about it.
That poor guy. Look, very briefly, it must really suck to work in the public eye that much just because everyone screws up. And then to have one moment when you stumble over your words just haunt you for essentially the rest of your professional career. I mean, that really does have to suck. And I have to give Goldberg credit for taking it on the chin with that one, because he's mocked himself a little bit over that killer line more often than not. So,
yeah. I think we all know, especially the three of us being, you know, from the backgrounds we are, that there's a lot of carryover between professional wrestling fans and mixed martial arts fans. And so that's where the majority of people who have a formulated opinion of Todd Grisham as a broadcaster are going to come from. You get more carryover from WWE fans watching UFC than you do people who watch the NHL or the NFL for that matter. And so they may not be familiar with anything Grisham has done other than his WWE work. I didn't think his WWE work was all that great. I didn't think it was Mike Adamle levels of terrible. And I do think his WWE commentary was better than what Mike Goldberg offered the UFC. That being said, to compare the two is really apples and oranges. It's a different product. One is a sport that has its roots in an entertainment style production. The other is an entertainment style production rooted in a sport. I got to watch a lot of Todd Grisham on ESPN because I'm a normal SportsCenter viewer. And he also did a lot of stepping in for Joe Tessitore when broadcasting ESPN's Friday Night Fights and later PBC boxing series that took over the Friday Night Fights spot. And on those shows, what you got was a very different Todd Grisham than what was presented by WWE. Todd would very simply call the action as it was in the ring. And when he didn't know exactly what to do, he leaned on his broadcast colleague, Teddy Atlas, who has a much greater understanding of the intricacies of boxing than Todd does, admittedly. I think that if Todd doesn't overstep his bounds and is willing to learn as he goes, and he's paired with a Brian Stann, which it looks like that's going to be his first broadcast partner because Rogan is not on that show. There's
it's
a very good
be
chance
Stan
Todd
or
Grisham.
Florian, and I really hope it's Stann because Stann can help carry him.
Stan seems to be the leading candidate based on what I've read, but if Grisham applies the same style to MMA that he did to boxing, we're probably going to be in for a much better commentary pairing than what we were used to from Mike Goldberg, because a lot of the mistakes you would see Mike Goldberg make, and not necessarily the stuff people like to pick on him for, like stumbling over his words with precise precision and accurate accuracy, but Goldberg had habits of calling a lot of things that didn't actually land, saying a fighter was hurt when it was very clear they tripped over their own feet. And Grisham tended to avoid that type of stuff because he wanted to present himself as a serious journalist who was not overstepping his bounds and didn't want to insult the core audience that he was working with.
Okay.
And I think we're in for a good ride with Todd Grisham replacing Mike Goldberg.
Well, look, I don't think it's official that he's the actual replacement. I think we know he's doing this fight, but I don't even think we know if he.
He's contracted for.
Is this going to be a trial run?
No, he's contracted because ESPN themselves broke the announcement that he was leaving their network officially and severing ties with them to work for the UFC.
Okay. Well, look, I was not a fan of Todd Grisham's WWE work. My problem with Goldberg generally is I felt he, as the play-by-play guy in recent years, he's been leaning far too much on Joe Rogan, and my problem has been is that it feels like Joe Rogan has been doing more play-by-play lately than Mike Goldberg has. And I feel like a change in voices is going to be a good thing. And I don't really mind this so much. And I'm willing to give Grisham the opportunity I would anyone else. And I'm just glad it's not Jim Rome. Thank God.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, Jim Rome is dodging a bullet. You would have, as much as we'll get on people for being cheerleaders, there would have been no bigger cheerleader than Jim Rome. There would have been nobody saying more outlandish things without any reason than Jim Rome. And then we would have had to hear about him praising his own commentary on his own shows.
Look, Jim Rome, he's a talk show guy. He's not a play-by-play analyst, and I don't think he ever has been. And I don't think he could do play-by-play for MMA either.
Rome, honest to God, had they gone with Jim Rome, I would have had to do coverage with the sound off. I would have had to mute every event that he called so I could keep from deafening myself intentionally.
Rome isn't the originator, but he's the guy who really popularized the hot takes on an issue format of TV that you see on ESPN and Fox Sports, being really outspoken about things without necessarily being educated about them. That's what Rome is famous for. That's his shtick. And it's been repeated and repeated. And the fact that he's still doing it says something for him, I guess, that he has a certain type of charisma that can capture an audience. But when you have a built-in audience that's not going to want to deal with that, it would have been such a disaster. Now, here's the thing. We brought up the name Joe Rogan. And, you know, just like there were rumors about Mike Goldberg leaving, and they were confirmed that that's going to happen with the new broadcast contract coming up and everything going on there. You know, Dana's words were, for commentary, he wants to put a dream team together. That was the terminology he used. And then they brought on Todd Grisham. And, you know, people scoffed once it was Grisham. But again, I think a lot of that is bias because of his WWE career as opposed to actually giving.
I need to bring this up. When I heard it was Todd Grisham, internally confused Todd Grisham with Josh Matthews and went, wait, really? This is where we're going with this? I was ready to make a joke about them just literally trading in Goldberg for a younger model. But thankfully, I was reminded that Grisham and Matthews, I straightened them out in my head when I got to see their pictures again. Like, oh, no, wait, different guy. We're okay here. So I nearly jumped off a ledge prematurely.
Coachman is going to replace Joe Rogan later this year. So there you go.
I don't think it's going to be Coach. I don't think we're going to see a Sunday Night Heat reunion. But in terms of Rogan, you know, the real animosity from him is starting to become very apparent. I don't know if either of you ever make it a habit to listen to any of the Joe Rogan Experience. I listen to excerpts of it here and there. I can't do a straight 4 hours of Joe Rogan. I can't do a straight 4 hours of anybody, so it's not an insult to him. But it's very clear on his podcast, he's been much more vocal in calling out a lot of things in the UFC that he doesn't like and that he doesn't agree with on the business structure. And he's been much more vocal about that with people that are on the UFC's let's call it what it is, a shit list, basically, like Brendan Schaub, who has his own podcast with the Fighter and the Kid. And he's been much more vocal about disagreeing with overall a lot of the company direction, as it were, and criticizing a lot of their moves. And without naming Dana outright, pretty much putting a lot of the blame on him. And, you know, it's on one hand a little bit nice to hear him not be the paid shill that he is on pay-per-view, because at least you're getting what I feel is a little bit more of the real Joe Rogan at that point. But at the same time, there's two Joe Rogans still. There's podcast Joe Rogan, who doesn't have any ties to the UFC. That's not something they have their hands in. That's his. And there's UFC pay-per-view Joe Rogan, who is promoter. This guy's great, this is going to be great. And then he puts on a completely different hat for the podcast. So on one hand...
We all do that. Everyone does that, though, Pat.
I disagree.
It's not, It's not
I disagree.
Unusual. Look, it's not unusual for people to kind of, you know, to have one voice at home and to have a different voice at work, you know. Even To Kill a Mockingbird addressed that.
But here's the point I'm getting to. Do you think it's any coincidence that he's getting more vocal about it with all these stemming rumors of his departure coming? That it's going to get even more angry and a lot more accusatory once he does leave the UFC.
It's not a coincidence, Pat. He said outright if Zuffa sold the company, he didn't want to come back if they sold it to new people. And the only reason they kept him for one more year is because they gave him a reduced schedule with less travel. So he's pretty much on his victory lap here. And I find it highly unlikely he sticks around after this current deal. It does seem like he's been more critical of the organization lately. But I feel Joe Rogan, he's always had his own opinions, especially on his podcast. And everyone, you know, he's always been he was always a really big fan and supporter of Fedor, even though the UFC was always sort of downplaying Fedor's accomplishments as the greatest heavyweight ever. And Rogan was one of the few people, associated with the UFC who wouldn't play that game. I don't know. To me, it's not that unusual, but I don't think it's a coincidence either, and I don't think he's going to be in the UFC that much longer. But, I mean, that's the nature of the business, man. You know,
it creates – what it does, though, is it does create a lack of credibility in his statements if he does get more aggressive against the UFC and he does become more accusatory towards things he disagrees with and towards an agenda that they may have that he points out that isn't necessarily one the company is publicly pushing. It loses a lot of credibility when you're going on pay-per-view and accepting their money and pushing the agenda on pay-per-view and then putting on that second hat doing the radio show.
I never had credibility with you anyway, so who cares?
But that's because I knew better from the get-go.
Easy.
It's an interesting point in the sense that
he's a broadcaster. He's got to do his job. I mean, I don't really. What are we upset about here?
Well,
I'm calling out hypocrisy on it.
Did you not hear him on pay-per-view say how ridiculous it was for CM Punk to be fighting in the UFC? I feel he was fairly honest about that.
And did he take the money and call the fight anyway?
He called the fight.
Oh, sure.
He said Punk shouldn't have been fighting in the octagon.
After the fact.
Well, he said it beforehand in the lead up as well. He was very. What's interesting in this case, specifically about Joe Rogan, is that while he always had his own opinions and his own stances, they were usually much more in line with what the UFC was doing, and Gulf has been increasing. And I think it was one of Luke Thomas's shows that this got brought up, and I thought about it and I wound up agreeing with this perspective. The UFC under Zuffa was a family business. Now, again, normally when you say that about a family business, you don't think of it as a worldwide multi-billion dollar entity. You think of the small mom and pop stores on the corner, or, a local franchise for groceries or whatnot. You don't think about family business as being that big, but in the case of Zuffa and the UFC, it was. It was a family run. It was run like that. You could, for want of a better phrase, and done at your own discretion, you could take people at their word. You could have a handshake deal. You could call up the bosses and get an interview basically whenever you wanted. And it was a very family style of company. That was how it was run. And now you've got the exact opposite. You have the most corporate entity possible that owns the UFC and is going to have things run within that particular set of circumstances. I mean, this is the, you get the same kind of reaction from people, and I don't know how many of if either of you have very much experience with this. I know a couple of people who have been through this. If you have a local franchise that is bought out by a massive conglomerate, but they keep some of the people on, all of a sudden the attitudes change, the perspectives change. They start, you know, complaining a lot more. Not all of them, but generally. This is a generalization. And this is just the first time I think we're seeing that played out within the MMA spectrum of going from, again, a family-style business into corporate America and the corporate structure. And that's what we're, and that's what we've got going forward now. And it's going to be interesting to see going forward, because that's so, so diametrically opposed to how the promotion was run under Zuffa. I mean, again, the average fighter is not going to be, you know, you're not going to have a sip of whiskey with Ari Emanuel after the fights. I mean, look, Conor, the only UFC fighter that is ever at the moment that is going to get anything approaching FaceTime with the owners of the company is going to be Conor McGregor. And that's because of the massive, massive amount of value he brings.
Okay.
Guys like,
but, I mean, you know, you could argue that was not really professional, and that's favoritism, that the Fertittas were doing that with Conor in the first place.
You could, and you'd be right, but benefits of family business, if you know the boss, maybe things break your way a little bit more.
Yeah, if you do good for them.
I can see,
no, that,
I can
that
see
doesn't
pros
hurt.
And cons to all of that, honestly.
There, oh, yeah,
but
this is not, there's no better or worse
we'll
here necessarily.
See. We shall see.
There's a lot of gray area.
As for Joe Rogan, I mean, I enjoy him more for his comedy work. I can't listen to a whole, like, podcast, but I do listen to the podcast occasionally.
His stuff on cannibalism was interesting.
Look, Joe Rogan, he's a weird, interesting cat. And I don't take everything he says at face value. I think he makes good points, but I don't agree with all of his points either. And for one thing, I'm never going to forgive him for making Brendan Schaub a thing. So, no thanks for that, Joe Rogan.
Fair point. Yeah, as for, very briefly, as for Todd Grisham, I hope he does well. I freely acknowledged on this show in the past, once Goldberg was announced to be leaving, that they could do worse. Which, I mean, again, for all the criticisms I've given of Goldberg, I freely acknowledge there were worse people out there for that job. And I believe they found someone who will be better than Goldberg. And I'm, again, I'm wishing him all the best, and I'm hoping for his success, and I'm very interested to see Brian Stann carry one more guy over the finish line this coming Sunday.
You know, I think I see no reason Anik could not get promoted at least temporarily to the A-team slot. Even though I know you don't like that, Robert. I feel Anik.
You know, Anik's the guy.
Again,
I feel they overproduced him in the wrong way for a while, but he's been there long enough and he knows the job. He could be. He easily could have been promoted to that spot.
I think that, though, they're afraid of making the show seem like a B show if Anik's on it, because he's been the B team announcer for so long at this point, and they want to have that A level of production and make it seem big and make it seem like the show you're watching. Hence why, you know, not only just not going with Anik, but if they were going to get somebody, they got somebody who's very familiar to ESPN, which, again, it's the world's leading sports network for a reason. Coming over from that network brings an air of credibility no matter who it is.
Yeah, but is the UFC fan base that knowledgeable about Todd Grisham and what he's done? You're the one who's saying he's been getting a lot of flack, mainly for his WWE experience. So is the UFC fan base really that knowledgeable about Todd Grisham and that excited about him replacing Mike
Well, they're not worried about the hardcore UFC fan base in that regard. They're worried about John Q. Public, who's going to be the casual viewer that buys the pay-per-view. And, you know, if they hear the same guy that they heard calling, you know, a card like the one we have coming up, okay, that Fight Night card, with, you know, if there are, you know, a card of similar lower value that they normally catch on FSN2, if they hear him on the pay-per-view, it doesn't feel like that, you know, it's going to give it that same feel. Imagine if you turned on, you know, again, to put an example in a wrestling term, if you were watching, you know, WWE in 1990 and it was a pay-per-view, and instead of hearing Vince McMahon or Gorilla Monsoon, you heard Sean Mooney. You know, it's that same, it's that,
yeah,
same type of feel. And that's not knocking Mooney as an announcer, but he's very clearly that lower tier for a reason. And if you heard that voice of a Gorilla or a Vince especially, you knew it was the A-level production. It was a bigger deal. And I think that's what they want to have. And promoting Anik doesn't give it that feel, no matter how much he's improved in his commentary. They wanted to get somebody else who was going to provide not only a different voice, but bring over credibility to the casual fan of the UFC who's more a general sports fan, and where they really make up the difference on those pay-per-view buys.
Except the flaw in that logic, Pat, is that basically Todd Grisham in WWE was basically WWE's Todd Pettingill.
Sort of, but not really, because he was basically the B-team announcer for doing Sunday Night Heat. And at the same time, you know, you're going to have people, but the same people who always bitch about Todd Grisham are the same people who were watching Sunday Night Heat every week and bitching about him every week. So no matter how bad he was, it was never bad enough to turn them off from the product. And something tells me they'll still sit through this too.
Well, I mean, even Michael Cole got promoted eventually. So, I mean, he was arguably...
Yeah, but Cole is, again, he's a guy who has that legitimate journalist background that the corporate structure loves and feels gives it a better feel.
If anything, there's an argument to be made that Grisham's promotion to SmackDown announcer was because he fell in the same mold that Cole did.
Yeah, that's an accurate comparison.
Well, and the big thing I think that they wanted, and the reason they went with Grisham over Anik, the UFC's television deal is coming to an end.
John Anik, he was a legitimate journalist before he did play-by-play work full-time.
He work for the world's largest sports network?
Yes, he worked for ESPN.
On camera on SportsCenter.
Yes, he was on camera on ESPN every week.
On SportsCenter, which is the most watched show on the network, every day.
I don't know if he was on SportsCenter, but he was on ESPN.
That's the difference. There are guys who do pro bass fishing on ESPN, but Grisham was on the network show, that flagship, every week, every day, at 5 o'clock and at 10 o'clock. Grisham was there leading things, in addition to branching out and doing other shows with them, calling college football, calling bowl games, calling Friday night fights and PBC broadcasts. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand, but I don't agree.
Eh,
fair enough. I think the big thing with Grisham is, and again, this has to do with the UFC's TV deal coming up in the very near future, and they're looking to get a more expansive deal, certainly for more money, if nothing else. They've been very public about that, and given the look, I've talked about it before. I believe the numbers pan out to the debt that WME IMG took on, the interest rate for the money they borrowed to buy the UFC amounts to $130 some odd million a year. And that's just interest. That's not principal. So they're going to need some bigger, and television could be a huge revenue source for them. So they're looking to diversify that, maybe get a deal similar to what the NFL has, where multiple networks will have different games, you know, so they could have different events, different fight nights on different channels. And they're going to have to give up some production control for that to happen. And a lot of television networks that we're looking at that are potentially interested in the UFC because they do good numbers as a general rule.
The number they were throwing out that WMEING is looking for when their current TV deal is up is $450 million per year over 10 years. So that's what they're looking for.
Which is nothing to sneeze at. That's a big ask. And a lot of networks very specifically said they wanted nothing to do with the hype man style of commentary that the UFC was running. And Todd
Russ,
Grisham, in addition to having all of the, again, all of the credibility that he does, is not a hype man style of commentator. He's a very straight-laced, very by-the-numbers commentary man. And that's what, you know, major networks are looking for when it comes to that. And I hope Grisham does the homework, because, again, I want someone who knows the product. I hope he does very well. I do wish him the best. I don't like bad commentators. I don't like bad nights of fights. You know, I want the product to be good. And I think, again, I hope he succeeds. I think he can be very well positioned to do just that. And that's one of the things I'm going to be most interested in on the upcoming fight night now, is just listening to his commentary and seeing how he does and seeing the reaction to it. Because I got to be honest with you guys, something that really came out of left field for me after Goldberg left, and it's been, you know, 2 weeks. He has not been gone forever. There has been a lot of rose-colored glasses about Mike Goldberg that came on,
which is part of what I spoke earlier,
which came on very quickly. And I mean, shockingly so. Like, you have people, and a lot of this is on Twitter and whatnot, but there are people who, you know, were praising him and are already kind of nostalgic for Mike Goldberg. And I mean, it baffles me, because, I mean, again, I said my piece on Goldberg, both good and bad, on the last show. And again, there was some good about Mike Goldberg, unequivocally. There was some bad about Mike Goldberg, as there is with everyone. I'm just very surprised about how quickly everyone, especially a lot of people who were critical of him. And again, he's on television doing a job. And you're a consumer. You have the right to be critical.
But look, he was with the company for almost 20 years. So that means for almost 20 years, he was the guy, the voice of the Octagon. And even if people don't like something, it's still a big change. And sometimes people would rather stick with what they know, even if they don't like it, because it's still a pretty big change.
That's true. Change does suck. That's my opinion.
It can. The silly part, though, is, again, what you're talking about with the rose-colored glasses, where you have people coming out on Twitter and saying, what was one of the more ridiculous comments I read? Can't believe they're replacing the legendary Mike Goldberg. This is such a sham. That man is the UFC. And not made in a sarcastic tone either. And then, you know, these are people who, if you look at, you know, what they've said before, geez, Goldberg is horrible. Why is he still there? And that's what we've mostly heard about Mike Goldberg's commentary for years. And now all of a sudden it's the end of an era, blah, blah, blah. It's these rose-colored glasses that people are putting on because, A, they don't like change and are just uncomfortable with it in general. B, there's a predisposed notion of what Todd Grisham is going to do as a commentator based on his WWE tenure, which I've made the case that you shouldn't take into any account whatsoever with this, because it's two different things.
All right, Pat.
And if you're going to take it,
we are going to give Todd Grisham his fair shake, okay? So,
no, I'm not saying you're not, but I'm just saying that the people who are on Twitter bashing this immediately need to stop it, because there's no basis for it.
You seem triggered about Todd Grisham, and you seem to be really homering for Todd Grisham here.
Because he's done very good play-by-play work, not just on Friday Night Fights, but as a College Bowl commentator. And to put a comparison in place just on that, you know, Mike Goldberg got to call a football game on national television and got one shot at it, and it was so bad that they yanked him and never had him do it again.
Yeah, incidentally, you can find his call of that game online. It's not easy to find, but it's there. And if you didn't hear it live, well, it's something.
And if you want to talk about triggered, Mike Goldberg's answer to people who were critical of his calls was to go on a profanity-laced tirade on Twitter.
Which I have to imagine contributed more to his not getting a return invite than his actual quality of commentary.
It might have been a 50-50 play. But you know, Goldberg is known for an announcer besides UFC. He did games for the Minnesota Wild in the NHL, and he's a little bit more knowledgeable about hockey because that's a background he came from, where he, you know, he kind of had a lead into that because he was doing stuff like that in college. But every job he's had as a play-by-play man, he's always failed at, except for the UFC, and it's arguable. I don't think you can say he failed because the promotion was willing to stick with him for that long. But as far as endearing himself and getting credit from audiences as a good commentator, that's only happening now because of this change. He's been blasted as a commentator for years by the vast majority of people who've heard him. And it's just a silly thing that they're going to bash this guy for years and years and years. And now all of a sudden they're going to jump on his bandwagon. Mike, don't go. How can you do this? We can't cope with this. No, not Todd Grisham, who incidentally has a much more decorated and celebrated professional broadcasting career in sports than does Mike Goldberg.
Yeah, this is no different from the people who turned on Ronda Rousey, and there were journalists out there who did that, who were, you know, were eager to trash her once she started losing. And now people want to delegitimize what she accomplished, where, yeah, developing division in a young sport, but that doesn't mean she was a crappy fighter and she didn't have any skills.
The only person I really heard, like, really turn on her and, like, really go from being her number one cheerleader to really viciously turning on her was Ariel Helwani. And then he backtracked off of that and tried to give an explanation as far as he was disappointed.
There's one guy out there, and I forget his name. This is the same guy who in 2015 was floating the idea about Ronda beating Floyd Mayweather in an MMA fight.
Yeah, well, as soon as he did that, he lost all credibility anyway.
Well,
but that's another story.
That's set that aside, but that's where he was. And then in the wake of Rousey's loss to Nunes, I believe the title of his most recent article on her was that she was nothing but a fabrication of the feminist liberal movement.
All right.
Which is hilarious, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. But the Rousey comparison is not really apt because what you have there is not necessarily people turning on her because she lost. It's people turning on her because of what she did and how she handled herself with the losses. Whereas this is just a case of people are just jumping on something to jump on it because there's change involved. It's not anything changing of the guard. It's not
right,
a public attitude display by Mike Goldberg.
People do it. Fans have been doing this type of crap for years.
We here implore them to be better people is kind of the sum total of that. Jeff,
maybe,
is there any other major news this week?
Well, look, if I can just say one last thing, maybe people who trashed Goldberg for years, maybe they feel bad for him. He's going to be out of a job, and maybe they're just trying to be better people and show him a little sympathy, you know, for his well-being. But who knows? Shogun's got a fight coming up. He's fighting Jean Valente at UFC Fight Night 107. So Shogun will be fighting again, and I don't hate
this. Is this like the wheelchair MMA league?
No. But I imagine he gets another somewhat cluckified decision. I don't hate that fight either, actually. Vellante's, he's been back and forth, but Shogun's very clearly on his way down. And
he won his last two. He beat Corey Anderson.
He didn't beat Corey Anderson. I saw that fight. I disagree with the scoring of that fight for Shogun Hua. Let me put it like that.
Corey Anderson is ranked number 9 right now, though, Robert. So he's got that going for him.
Now, Corey's on the way up. Again, Corey Anderson is the other prospect, along with Misha Serkinov and Nikita Krylov, for that division.
Right.
Shogun and Vellante ought to be at least entertaining. You know, those two guys, Vellante especially, likes to punch, and
that's all really Shogun can do.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of punches to the face, and hopefully it'll be entertaining along the way.
A fight I'm kind of ambivalent about that got announced recently. Jacare is fighting Tim Bosch at middleweight. Poor Jacare, man. Should have gotten a title shot forever ago. He keeps getting passed over. And now we have Tyron Woodley campaigning for a super fight with Tyron Woodley. Someone please get me a noose. I'm going to hang someone. It won't be me, but there's going to be bloodshed. I hope cooler heads prevail. But now we have Tyron Woodley. He's yapping about a fight with Michael Bisping. And look, I get it. Tyron Woodley he's a champion now. He wants to make as much money as he possibly can, and he wants to freaking cash out. I can totally get that, but Tyron Woodley is vastly overestimating his drawing power and vastly overestimating the fact and not understanding the fact that he is not a money weight fighter. You're not a money weight fighter. To be a money weight fighter, people have to be willing to plunk down money to watch you fight those type of fights, and that's not Tyron Woodley. So
the only way that fight draws a significant amount of money is if they do it in the UK after a really prolonged build up to it that maybe has them coach a season of tough together, and maybe they get into a staged fight on the show or something. If he really wanted a money weight fight,
both not champions, and they're both not champions with ready contenders who are lined up to fight them in their weight class.
That doesn't really have anything to do with it. People always want to see champions fight champions. It doesn't really matter who's waiting in the wings, but especially, again, going to the casual viewer. If the casual viewer sees two belts on a poster, they're going to buy the pay-per-view. That's where the money's made.
Casual viewers are not asking for this fight. It's a dumb fight. It's a dumb
Yeah, but they're not asking for any fights. That's the point. But if they see a poster with two guys with belts, that's the whole drawing point. Whereas if Tyron really wanted to make a money weight fight, he would fight Connor if he could. But the problem there is that he risks, if he loses to Connor, looking worse because he's losing to a guy moving up to fight him. If he moves up and he fights Bisping and he loses, well, he's the smaller guy. He moved up. He doesn't really lose any face by doing that.
All right, well, that's the fight. We have Jacare versus Tim Bosch at UFC 208. Hopefully, Jacare will crush
him. Oh, Jacare is going to run him over like a truck.
But look.
Wouldn't it be great if Bosch plays spoiler again, though?
That would be hilarious.
It would not be great. My ideal scenario here is he runs over Tim Bosch, and I would tell him don't accept any other fight unless it's for the title, because this is getting ridiculous. I'm annoyed that Yoel Romero is probably getting the next shot against Bisping over Jacare.
I love it. He's the best cheater in MMA.
Look,
fair play.
Jacare, I feel Jacare should have gotten the shot over Vitor freaking Belfort, which I thought was a dumb mat. But, you know, I get why Chris Weidman opted for Vitor, but I feel it should have been
Jacare. Weidman wanted an easier fight, and God bless him for getting it.
Look, I feel it should have been Jacare back then, and I'm just annoyed that Jacare keeps getting passed over here. It's frustrating. I'm a big fan of Jacare, and I don't hate this fight. It's just that I feel like Jacare should only be fighting for the title.
I don't hate the fight. I
pity him a little bit.
Circumstances that led to it, which is fair.
I pity him a little bit, but also, if you go back, if he'd have just beaten Yoel, we wouldn't be here.
I seem to recall scoring that fight for Jacare, actually. I don't even.
Yeah, but
like, to me, it shows it's bullshit because that's not even a real loss because he failed a drug test.
He failed an out of competition drug test after the fact. That issue had nothing to do with the fight. There was
that drug test was in no way impactful on that fight. And under the commission rules, it doesn't do anything.
Should have been overturned.
The commission rules are what they are. And if Jacare would have finished Yoel Romero, he'd have been in a better position where he wouldn't have had to worry about borderline rounds.
It wasn't really an emphatic win for Romero anyway.
But you don't need to win by emphatic wins when you're beating a top-level contender like that.
Well, he did get an emphatic win when he knocked the stuffing out of Chris Weidman with that knee, though. And, I mean, that's why he's getting the title shot. He was on a big card.
And he had one before it with Machida.
He's still a cheater.
I'm not entirely sure. Nobody's denying that.
He's the best cheater in the sport.
Like, I'll dispute the drug test results because because they've never been conclusively proven that he was at fault for that, and the man spent 15 years under the strictest drug testing available when competing on the international stage in amateur wrestling. But in the cage, yeah, he's he knows how to play the angles.
Okay. And I guess this will
be brilliant.
I guess this will be the last little bit of news. Mirko Krokop Filipovic has once again retired from MMA after knocking out King Mo and Ryzen. So he's retired about, I think, 5 times at this point. I don't know if this will be his last MMA retirement, but he has retired again.
At a minimum,
he beat
this
other kid too, though. Yeah,
no,
this is
a
known third
at that event.
He beat the Iranian kid. They call him the Iron Sheik, the wrestler.
Hang on, I will find the specifics of his run through that Ryzen one night tournament.
Yeah, I forget the kid's name, but he was talked about because he's got a really good wrestling background, and there's the hope that he can eventually kind of make a play for the UFC.
Let's see.
Jeff, you know who I'm talking about, right?
Card.
Amir Ali Akbari?
That's him.
Yeah, he beat Baruto Kaito earlier in that same night. Because the other two events were on a different card. That one was on the same night. Yeah, Ali Akbari. Good record in the world championships. He probably will make a run for the UFC at some point, despite the loss to Mirko there.
Yeah, and this tournament was like his. I think he only had 3 fights before, or 2 fights before it, and
he
went in and
coming into this tournament and exits at 5-1. Excuse me.
He's just getting started. He's a wrestler. He doesn't really have any kind of striking background, and you throw him in there with even an aged Krokop, that's not exactly a win-win, and fighting multiple times in one night to do it.
I'll keep an eye on that guy because as far as Mirko goes, this is, I believe, his 3rd retirement. As far as that goes, this one might stick. I was actually a fan of Mirko. I make no bones about it. He's actually part of the reason I got into the sport. He was one of the first fighters I actually learned about by name, studied up on, kind of watched what he was able to do. So if he is done, he got to go out on a couple of wins, and he got to knock out King Mo. So, that's all.
I'd be more surprised if Krokop never fights in the UFC again.
Krokop's been that guy where as soon as a large check tends to come his way for what could be very easy work or very short work, he'll take it. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
We might get the rematch between or the rubber match, I think, between Krokop and the Ream in the near future, depending on how Overeem does against Mark Hunt.
Maybe he wants to rematch Mark Hunt. Maybe he wants to rematch with Frank Mir. Maybe that'll happen in Japan at some point. I kind of feel something will get him back in there. After three retirements, man. I mean, seriously. But if this is it for him, good for him. And I hope he's made his money and everything. And Krokop has had quite a career. So, fought in the UFC, fought in Pride. Won a Pride tournament. Was one of Pride's top heavyweights. Never really quite, broke through in the UFC, but he had some prolific fights and prolific wins there. So good for Krokop.
Yeah. Again, thanks for the memories, and I imagine he'll probably take another exhibition fight or two, and we'll see what the future holds for him, but. He had a good run through that event. That event, though, I caught one of the fights I caught from that event was Gabby Garcia versus I can't remember that woman's name. I will find it.
No, I fast forwarded through that. I didn't even stop.
Hang on.
Yumiko Okada.
Yumiko Hota. Thank you. For those of you who don't know, Yumiko Hota is a 50-some-odd-year-old professional wrestler.
She's 49. She's 49, not yet 50.
Fair enough.
No.
She'll be 50 in 2 days. In 2 days, she will be 50.
And this was actually supposed to be Garcia versus Shinobu Kandori, who is another, again, older. She's actually over 50. She's 52. I saw that. It features an honest-to-goodness running the rope segment from Hota. I don't know what we're doing at this point. It's... Ryzen, you know, what are you going to do?
Japan, yay!
Yeah. All right, I think that's everything. Certainly all the... So, Jeff, what do you got to plug? What do you want to mention for the upcoming week?
For fans of anime, if you like anime stuff, One Piece Film Gold, check out my review of that. It's getting a limited run in U.S. theaters this week. So if you're – it's not a great – not what I would call a great anime film. It's definitely a filler movie, but it's got good animation, good production values, and it's got fun characters. So take a look at that. Check out my reviews of the worst movie of the year, Assassin's Creed, Passengers, which was getting way much more hate than it should have. A very underrated movie. Check out my reviews of those films, of course, Rogue One. Man, check out my column from last week on Cyborg and what's been going on with her. Got a ton of feedback, a lot of comments. Thank you to all the readers who read the column and commented. Really appreciate it, and be on the lookout for what I have coming up this week. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Robert. Pat, always a pleasure. Later, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff. I'll see you in 2 weeks. All right. Pat, anything you wanted to plug before I do my final bits here?
I'd like to congratulate the organization, which I am a minority stake owner of, the Green Bay Packers, for their big playoff win today at Lambeau Field against the New York Giants. Congratulations to the Giants on an overachieving season, but I'd like to congratulate my staff, my players, my team that I own. Yes, I own a 1% stake in the team, and I get to relish that when they win.
How'd you pull that off?
Oh, well, it was a big thing a couple years ago, the Green Bay Packers, to finance a new stadium renovations and such. They opened up stock options on the team that you could buy, and I'm not necessarily a Green Bay Packers fan. I'm an Oakland Raiders fan. But who doesn't want to own their own football team and can actually say that to a girl and not lie?
Smart investment, too. The Packers have a very rabid fan base and have a long string of high-level success. You know, whether maybe not football,
yeah,
maybe not Super Bowl every year, but they're
it doesn't really pay off anything. It's more, you know, hey, I can say I own a football team. I own that with, you know, about God knows how many other people, but I own it.
All right, yeah, congratulations to the Packers. The Super Bowl's coming up. All right, there will be no show next Sunday. Again, I will be covering UFC Fight Night 103, which will happen that Sunday evening. That ought to be interesting. I will have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com, so stop by, say hello. I appreciate it. This is going to be kind of a rough one. I'm hoping for good action. Crossing my fingers. We'll be back the week after that, though, so that will be, let me bring in my calendar, the 22nd. Make sure that works. Yes. We will be back the 22nd, and we will be reviewing UFC Fight Night 103. We'll also be previewing UFC on Fox 23. The Denver card, headlined by Valentina Shevchenko and Juliana Pena.
That's a good fight.
The winner probably gets a title shot. And Juliana, this is weird because I've never been impressed with Juliana Pena, but she keeps winning. Shevchenko kind of by contrast.
She's a successful John Lineker.
She's more of a grappler than Lineker. Shevchenko
in the
is,
sense that she's not impressive, but she wins.
That's fair. Shevchenko had a very – her last fight was tremendous when she beat Holly Holm. Very nearly beat Amanda Nunes and would have therefore mm-hmm. got the title shot against Misha Tate. I'm interested in Shevchenko versus Nunes over five rounds. So, again, it's a good fight. Also, we have Donald Cerrone fighting Jorge Masvidal because violence. I'm not complaining one
yes.
bit about that. There's a relevant bantamweight fight. Rafael Assuncao is fighting Aljamain Sterling. There's some interesting things that can come out of that one. Andrei Arlovsky is going down against Francis Ngannou because Francis Ngannou is a freak of nature. I mean, this is going to be his first real high-level test, but Arlovsky's chin is shot, and Ngannou hits very hard. Hector
yeah,
Lombard,
I saw his last fight.
Who, Arlovsky?
No, Ngannou.
That Kimura that shouldn't have worked, but because he has just like screw
Brute,
you strength.
Unbelievable strength. Yeah.
It's, I mean, that shouldn't work that way. I watched that sequence and just went, this should not happen. And yet, there it is. Also, you got Hector Lombard and Brad Tavares. And Nate Marquardt's going to go down against Sam Alvey. Good old smiling Sam. It's not
love
a bad
Sam
card.
Alvey. Fan favorite fighter right there.
Who doesn't love Sam Alvey? It's impossible to dislike Sam Alvey.
He's an average guy who decided he wants to fight, and he also happens to be married to the former winner of America's Next Top Model.
And the craziest thing about that, after his last win, I think, or the one before that, he got on the mic, and what he said about it was, no, I just do what she tells me to do. She's the puppet master. I'm just the marionette.
Top five list of people in this world I could have a beer with and hang out with for an hour. Sam Alvey's on there.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting card to preview, and we'll be back in 2 weeks for that. All right, as for me, I don't have anything. I didn't get anything written out last week. I got, again, for those of you who listened to the last show, I wound up dealing with an obnoxious illness that just wouldn't go away. I finally did, though, so yay me. So, again, I'll just have coverage this Sunday in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com. So, again, stop by, say hello. Pat, thanks for calling in. You know you're always welcome here. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Many thanks to Jeff for constantly being here and, you know, putting up with me and our disagreements on occasion. So thanks to Jeff. He's always appreciated. And thanks to you, the listener, for continuing to tune in and supporting us. For disabling ad blocker, if you're listening online, much appreciated. Trying to grow this thing here. For sharing us with your friends, if they're interested in the sport, again, we're just trying to grow the cast here. And the bigger shows are still doing pretty good numbers, which I look at every now and then. So thank you all very much for that. You are much appreciated as far as the show goes. 2 weeks, we'll be back. Until then, for Pat Mullen and Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey, reminding everyone out there to please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.